And we're your hosts. I'm Diane Bortoletto.
And I'm Monique Chicardo.
Let's do it.
Hello, hello, and welcome to And Away We Go F1 Podcast, a Formula One podcast that goes beyond the track limits to talk about travel, food, and lifestyle surrounding the sport. I'm your pre-Drive to Survive Formula One fan. My name's Diane Bortoletto, and today I'm in Margaret River in Western Australia.
And I'm Monique Chicardo. I remember to say my name. I'm your post-Drive to Survive fan, and I'm finally back at home in Stavanger for 1 week. Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. You have just been like on a cruise across the like French and Italian Riviera, and you've spent time in Tuscany. How was your trip?
I've been everywhere. It was lovely, but I am so happy to be home and just relax and have my things and have my own couch to watch the race on. Oh, and to see my partner, you know, obviously that too.
Who? The one that hasn't proposed, he who shall not be named.
Yeah, who? Oh, yeah, that guy. Yeah. Anyway, it's been lovely to see my partner too.
Espen, if you're listening, we're waiting for a ring. We've just had the Miami Grand Prix and what a race. Oh, my God, there's so much to unpack.
Oh, my gosh. And not just because it was a sprint weekend, because both races, there was so much that happened in both races. And you and I both, our eyes are hanging out of our heads this morning because we've both gotten up at ridiculous times or stayed up at ridiculous times to watch the race. And we both managed to stay awake because it was just action-packed races. But I think we need to start with the sprint before we get ahead of ourselves, right? Let's do this.
Yeah, we do need to start with the sprint. Sprint quali. Kimi Antonelli, the 18-year-old Italian, the youngest pole sitter by 2.5 years. The next youngest is Sebastian Vettel. What an absolutely, I actually shed a tear for him. Italy, I have a passport, as you do.
Yeah.
Cheered just as loudly for the Italian driver. There's one. Just as I do for the Australians. But, oh, that was so lovely to see.
Yeah.
Him, and the kid's got a very bright future.
I think so. And it was such a proud mum moment. Like, I could actually be his mum. I think I'm 17 years older than him. So I could literally be his mum.
Definitely could be his mum.
Yeah. I could be his mum. So I had a proud mum moment watching him. Like, and just the excitement when he was told that he got pole over the radio. It was just, you know, even if you're not a Mercedes fan, even if you're not a Kimi Antonelli fan, which I don't understand how you couldn't be a Kimi Antonelli fan, you just, you've got to be proud of the kid. He's so young and it managed to pip everyone to that pole.
The cutest thing about Kimi Antonelli getting pole position, besides the phone call with his mum and his dad kissing him on the cheek, big Italian bear hug and kiss, was when he got out of the car and he kind of just wandered off and he started wandering into his garage. Like, he wasn't sure where he needed to do. And then someone grabbed him. He's like, Kimi, Kimi, you need to get weighed and then you need to go do interviews and, you know, put your helmet here and put the hat on and stuff. It was, I just thought it was just,
it was innocent.
So endearing.
It was so innocent. It was so cute. And yeah, the call with his mum afterwards, it was just adorable. Like, yes, family pride. Yes, calling mum after the race. You're human. You're excited. That was just gorgeous. So he made it to pole by 0.045 seconds ahead of Piastri. Norris was in third. Verstappen was in fourth. Russell, Leclerc, Hamilton, Albon, Hadjar, and Alonso. That was our top 10 for the sprint. It was a pretty, I wouldn't say, it wasn't too jumbled. I mean, the top 10 were quite jumbled in comparison to what we might normally have expected, obviously, given Kimi Antonelli was up there in number one. But, you know, we had a racing bull up there. We had a tractor up there oh my God, why have I forgotten Alonso's car? Oh my gosh.
The Aston Martin.
Thank you.
The Aston Martin tractor.
The Aston Martin tractor was up there in number 10. And we also had a Williams up there in the top 10. So pretty exciting.
Yeah, very exciting sprint qualifying. And then the sprint race itself was so wet, right?
Oh my God.
It was scenes of Melbourne all over again. Like, just the track was so wet. It was a, you know, they delayed the start because the track was so wet.
It was so wet that literally everyone on the radio in the formation laps behind the safety car, they were all like, this is the worst visibility I've ever seen. Like, we cannot see behind these cars. Yeah. And I think that says a lot, right? When it's, you know, everyone's saying that it's the worst that they've ever seen. You cannot underestimate just how much water was on that track.
You can just see from the onboard cameras, right, on the broadcast. Even Kimi Antonelli, who was first behind the safety car, was saying that there was no visibility. Years ago, they would have run the race in those conditions and someone would have crashed and someone might have been injured or worse. You know, and that has happened in the past. But I'm really glad that nowadays that safety is paramount and top of mind and that they do sensible things like delay the start.
Absolutely. And I mean, speaking of crashes, Paul Leclerc on the formation lap just totally aquaplaned and into the wall on the formation lap. It was Hadjar in Melbourne 2.0.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not exactly the most dignified way to, you know, DNF a race, but at the same time, it just goes to show how difficult these conditions are and how difficult it is to drive when your tyres aren't yet in the sweet spot, aren't yet warmed up, and you've got so much water on the track. Like, you know, DNF'd before the race even started.
Exactly. If a multiple race winner with years of experience can aquaplane like that, you know, and Hadjar did it on his rookie first race in his F1 career, it just goes to show how easy it is to do.
Yeah.
In some ways, I kind of hope that Isaac Hadjar takes a little bit of...
Felt a little bit vindicated.
Yeah. Not that we wish any driver to be aquaplaning and out of control in their car and hitting barriers by any stretch.
But of course, I get what you mean. Seeing that as a rookie, you'd kind of go, okay, so anyone can do it.
It's not just me.
Exactly. It's not just me. Shove it where the sun don't shine, Helmut Marko, for talking about Hadjar crying.
Exactly. Yeah, there's rumours going around that he's going to leave Red Bull by the end of this year.
Oh, hallelujah. It's time to lay down and grow old. You're already ancient. We don't need, like, honestly, we don't need any more fossils in Formula One. I'm sorry.
He just has a very old school way of doing things, which is harsh, and it's harsh. It's really hard to watch.
It is, especially when you're trying to foster young talent, which he clearly is not doing because he doesn't foster young talent. He just ditches them. It's hard to watch when we live in a completely different time now where we look to our sports stars to be role models, not to be hard asses and ruthless.
Just to round out that rumour, his replacement rumour is Sebastian Vettel.
Oh my God, love.
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 Wouldn't he just be awesome in that role?
Oh my gosh, I got chills. Yes. Love Sebastian Vettel as an advisor, as someone that the drivers look up to. Yes. Yes, Sebastian Vettel.
The only downside to that is that I would love to see Seb Vettel maybe with the FIA or in another role where he's effective with all of the teams, not just Red Bull.
Yeah.
Because he is such an awesome human.
Such a force. Okay, yeah, I've still got chills. Okay, you're going to have to take us away with the next comment while I get over this.
Okay, well, the sprint race itself, Kimi Antonelli, the poor kid, from the highs of his very first pole position to the lows of getting a terrible start and just dropping back from, what did he drop back to? I think fourth place or fifth place or sixth place in lap one.
So it was Piastri that he basically did a repeat of the race in Jeddah where he came up, you know, fast, hard and fast behind Verstappen, and Verstappen was trying to get Piastri for basically forcing him off in turn one. So basically Piastri came up in Jeddah, Piastri came up hard and fast behind Verstappen to overtake Verstappen on that first corner because he wanted the race lead. And that's exactly what happened to Kimi Antonelli. And I'm not going to lie, when Kimi Antonelli took pole, I was speaking to a couple of friends. So shout outs to Zanita Whittington and a friend, Angelo, who, bless, only realized that I like Formula One now and he doesn't have anyone to speak to Formula One about. So I was like, message me. And I did say to them, when Antonelli took pole, I was like, oh, I'm so excited for the kid. And as much as I want to see him win, I think Oscar's going to take it off him lap one. And if he doesn't take it off him in lap one, it's only going to be a matter of laps before he leads the race. And what happened? Oscar came up aggressive, very fair, very fairly aggressive.
And hard racing. Yep.
Hard racing. And he took that pole position, and Antonelli on the radio was, again, trying to get that position back because, you know, you don't want to lose that position.
Yeah. Also, Kimi Antonelli, you know, got crashed into by Max Verstappen in the pit lane. Not Max's fault, we should say, that when the Red Bull team released Max from the pit stop and Antonelli was coming in, which meant that Kimi couldn't get into his pit to do the tyre change. So he just had to continue on out of the pits back onto the track.
The luck of this kid, the poor thing.
Yeah, it was awful to watch.
And how many wasted having to do just to drive through? It's like a good 20 seconds.
Exactly. Sainz hit the wall in the sprint race.
Yeah, he got He got a massive puncture and was driving back into the pits with sparks flying.
That's right. The tyre was off the rim. And then Liam Lawson crashed into Fernando Alonso. I mean, I don't think those two are friends anyway after last year.
Oh, my God. And Verstappen did end up getting a 10-second time penalty for that unsafe release, which I think then meant this was the first time he's finished outside of the points in a very, very, very long time. I can't remember exactly how long it's been, but yeah, a very, very long time he fell outside of points.
So that relegated Max to plumb last in the sprint race, which was 17th, with Fernando Alonso out, Carlos Sainz and Charles Leclerc all out. And we had safety cars, of course, because of those crashes, which ended up playing into the hands of Lando Norris of McLaren. So we saw Lando take the win of the sprint race with Oscar coming second. So luckily, there's only 1 point between first place in a sprint and second place in a sprint. Lewis Hamilton in third. Really good to see a happy Lewis Hamilton. I mean, that was short-lived. We'll get to that. In third, George Russell in the Mercedes in fourth. Lance Stroll. Now, you're sitting down. Lance Stroll, fifth in the Aston Martin. Gosh, great to see that tractor in the points. And then Yuki Tsunoda in sixth in Red Bull. Kimi Antonelli ended up finishing seventh. Yeah. And Pierre Gasly in the Alpine in eighth. So they're the points for the sprint race.
Which is fantastic to see. As much as we give Stroll a hard time, kudos to him for finishing in fifth. Like, that's fantastic. Really? I mean, we did also have an Albon, Lawson and Behrman penalties. So that jumbled up our finishing positions a fair bit. But to talk about Lando Norris winning, oh my gosh, you could hear Norris on the radio. He knew that there was going to be a safety car and he was pushing so hard to come in on that safety car over the radio. He knew, strategy-wise, he knew what he was doing. And yeah, he...
Exactly. He's not stupid. As we've said in the past, Oscar does his talking on the track and redemption on race day. We'll get to that in a seg.
It was frustrating to watch.
It was. Being Australians, of course, we're cheering all the way for Oscar Piastri. Australia hasn't had a leader in the World Drivers Championship since 2010 when Mark Webber was leading. So it's been a long 15 years for Formula One fans in Australia. Just think, right? It was last year in Miami that Lando got his very first win.
Yeah.
Look how far. And the year before that, McLaren came last in Miami. In 2 years, I mean, this is what's going to happen to Williams next year, I reckon. And all going well. So anyway, it just goes to show how quickly things can change in Formula One.
100%. 100%.
So that's the sprint. And then I love sprint weekends. There's just so much action with skin in the game. I'm guilty. I don't always watch the practices, the free practices, because I think, what's the point? It doesn't really count. And teams do use those practices to try different setups, and it's not always an indication. They're not always racing to get the fastest time, right? It's why it's called free practice, right? And sometimes they put in their reserve drivers and give up-and-coming drivers a drive in various free practices. So I'm guilty of not always sitting down and watching those. But when a sprint weekend is on, you only have one free practice, and then you've got sprint qualifying and the sprint race. And obviously with points in the sprint race, there's skin in the game and it counts and it's important and it just means more action for us to watch.
Hell yeah.
I kind of think every weekend should be a sprint race.
Oh, I wish. I wish. Could you imagine? Honestly, after a sprint weekend, when you go into the next weekend, and it's only one race, it feels like an empty weekend. It doesn't feel like it doesn't feel like there's much to do. So speaking about the race, before we get into that, I would like to just revert back to what we predicted from the last time we were speaking about the race. So this was 2 weeks ago. We sat down and we made our predictions, right? And I remember my prediction for the race. I said, it's hard to not be on the Piastri train. It's so hard to not be on the Piastri train right now. Of course, would say Piastri would win, but I'm not going to discount Max Verstappen because Max Verstappen is angry. He's fast. He's got something to prove and he's pretty good around this track. That was my prediction. And your prediction was?
It was Oscar.
Yep.
First, Leclerc, second. And then I said, I would like to see Kimi Antonelli, but I think it was going to be angry Max. I think that's what I said.
Yeah.
For third.
Yeah. Now, our predictions didn't entirely come true, but there were bits and pieces there that happened. So, so race. Who won, Di?
Oscar Piastri!
Oh, Oscar Piastri.
So good, right? So thrilled for Oscar. It was a dominant performance.
Oh, yeah.
Max was on pole. Lando was in second on the grid. Kimi Antonelli qualified third. And then Oscar was in fourth. So he was on the second row of the grid. Then George Russell, Carlos Sainz, Alex Albon, Charles Leclerc, Esteban Ocon, and Yuki Tsunoda, top 10 on the grid.
So
turn one. Oh, don't we love turn one? We just want a life of turn one.
Yes, yeah, I agree.
The best part of the race.
I agree.
And Angry Max was being angry and proving a point and not letting or trying not to let Lando overtake him.
Mm-hmm.
To be fair, he, you know, was at the apex of the corner first. So the stewards said Lando went wide, lost three places or four.
No, he got to sixth.
Exactly. Lando in sixth place and Oscar Piastri got in there, tucked in behind Max, and then overtook him. Took a while, but he's such a clever driver, Oscar. He tried to overtake Max and Max just does that thing where he's just elbows out, takes the apex of the corner. He's not giving them room, but he's in front and just not conceding because he doesn't have to.
He makes it hard. This is why both you and I managed to stay awake during this race at ridiculous times that we were watching it. You watched it at 4 a.m. I watched it way past my bedtime at 11 p.m. And the first 14 laps was close racing the entire time. 14 laps. That's normally by then the race has settled down a bit and everyone's kind of, you know, just chugging on through. Like you said, the first turn, Verstappen just came straight across to cover off Norris. It was very, very deliberate attacking move. That's what defensive move.
Textbook Max.
Norris running wide and dropping back to sixth meant Piastri got up right behind Antonelli and it didn't take him long to overtake Antonelli.
Yeah.
And for 14 laps, Piastri was behind Verstappen. And he was within DRS that entire time. Well, once he cleared Antonelli, he was within DRS on Verstappen. And just watching that fight, oh my gosh, like you said.
It was so good.
Wasn't it? Verstappen had his elbows out so hard, but he was really, really struggling with the brakes and with the dirty track. Like you said, he is a very, very smart driver, Piastri. He basically made the pass, had the inside line, and he wanted to keep that inside line super bad, therefore was late on the brakes, couldn't deal with being so late on the brakes, locked up, and in came Piastri, and straight past him.
Like you said, Oscar was trying to pass him. He tried the same move on a couple of laps, didn't work.
Yeah.
And then he thought, well, going to try something different, and he did, and it paid dividends.
Yep.
Later on in the race, when it came time for Lando to overtake Max. Apparently, Lando was being coached by his race engineer on exactly what Oscar had done to overtake Max.
Oh, well, now isn't that interesting?
Lando, you can't keep doing the same thing and expect a different result, right?
Yeah.
Which is what Oscar did. He tried a couple of times. No, Max wasn't having it. He defended his position really well.
He did.
Obviously, tried something different, like you said. He tucked in behind him and then overtook him when Max was late on the brakes.
See, I find that really interesting that Lando was needing a little bit of guidance to do that. Lando is wheel-to-wheel racing. He concedes very easily. I guess, you know, you need to be able to pick and choose and determine where you need to concede and just go, this overtake isn't for me right now. I can't do this because there's going to be a collision. But I also think that his risk-taking is a completely different level to where Piastri is at the moment. Piastri's got that control. He's got that. He's got the smarts. He knows where he can.
Piastri has the racecraft.
Yeah.
He's got the racecraft. And that's it's just evident. There's never been a race more evident than in Miami with both of them trying to overtake Max, with Oscar doing it after several attempts, trying something different and succeeding. Lando needing someone in his ear. We don't know for sure if someone was in Oscar's ear telling him, try this. I think that was just instinctive, but we don't know for sure. So I'll just say that.
I'm going to say instinctive. Given the last few races and how he has managed to take the lead if he hasn't been on pole, I feel like it's instinct. Again, we could say we're biased.
Oh, we are.
We are. But
let's just call it. Own it.
At the same time, I don't think there would be too much argument there from people if we said that he's just got the instinct. He knows what he's doing. I don't think people would argue with that. And it was just like textbook race from Piastri. At one point, he was 9 seconds ahead of the field, which...
I know, right?
He's like 2023 Verstappened the race.
Yeah, absolutely.
He was just...
In 2023, Verstappen was a minute 27 ahead of everybody else.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Yeah. Giving Verstappen a taste of his own medicine right now, because by lap 17, I think it was, Verstappen was in third place. There was just no way that anyone was catching the McLarens this weekend. They were in a league of their own. Their race pace was phenomenal.
It sure was.
You heard it on the radio that the whole time Verstappen wasn't happy with brakes. He wasn't happy. He was sliding all over the place. And then the Ferraris just, dare I mention, the Ferraris raced in.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Madonna.
Madonna mia. Anyway, Lewis was elated with his third place in the sprint on the podium.
And rightly so.
Absolutely. Like, deservedly happy. Good on him. That's brilliant. But then during the race, he just wasn't finding the pace. He got team orders to swap with Charles. They were on different tyre strategies. And Charles was complaining on the radio, I'm overheating, which is code for I need to get ahead of Lewis. One of the radio messages from Lewis was, sit back and have a cup of tea. And then they said to Lewis as well, oh, Carlos Sainz is 1.4 seconds behind. And Lewis said, do you want me to let him pass as well? I was like, whoa, Lewis. He was cranky.
I lost it at that because it was so passive aggressive. It was, you know, it was him trying to keep his cool, but let them know that he was not happy with being told to swap back again. But Espen and I were discussing it as it was happening, and fair's fair, right? They gave Lewis the opportunity to try and make up that gap to Antonelli, to try and get themselves into fifth. I think that was what they were fighting for. And he just wasn't taking enough time out of that 5 second gap. I think he got it down to 3 seconds, but this was over many, many laps. And then the whole time we had Leclerc in the background saying, when are you going to reverse the orders? When are you going to reverse the orders? And so when it finally did happen, they weren't happy about it because they lost more time, obviously swapping back around. And it didn't give Leclerc...
Charles didn't do any better.
No, but he didn't have the time to. There were only like 7 laps left or something by the time they swapped back. But fair's fair, if they weren't going to catch Antonelli, undo... And this is what Jolyon Palmer and Alex Jakes were saying in the commentary as well. They said... They need to undo that artificialness that they have just because it, because it wasn't, there was no benefit to them doing that. And it's a matter of points for Leclerc. You wouldn't want to give up points for no reason. If Hamilton had have gone ahead and challenged Antonelli, sure, fine, brilliant, we get it. But you've got to undo that if it wasn't working. So, but it was just, it was messy, wasn't it? It was uncomfortable to watch.
It was. Not great from the Scuderia, not great.
But great from the William.
I know. Alex Albon finished fifth. Amazing, right? And Carlos Sainz ninth. So two Williams in the points, which is just yay.
Beyond.
So stoked running through the top 10 of the results of Miami. So Oscar Piastri obviously takes the win, 25 points. In second place was Lando Norris. He gets 18 points. George Russell in third. Max Verstappen ended up finishing fourth. Alex Albon in fifth. So he picks up 10 points. Kimi Antonelli finished sixth. So very, very good result for the rookie. And he picks up 8 points for that. Then Charles Leclerc in seventh. He gets 6 points for that. Lewis Hamilton in eighth position, and he gets 4 points for that. Then Carlos Sainz in ninth, and Yuki Tsunoda in 10th. And Isaac Hadjar just behind him, just literally just behind him in 11th. So
yeah,
just missed out on points.
Yeah. Yeah, and we did have four DNFs. So Lawson, Bortoleto, Behrmann, and Doohan were DNFs. So Doohan, first lap, DNF, because Lawson ran into the side of him. There was nothing that Doohan could do. He would have been in the wall if he went any further.
He's not having a good time. He's not having a good season, Lawson, is he? He's just crushing everybody and DNFing and not.
All right, Mazespin. he's taking over the role of the destructor at the back there. Hit Doohan, gave Doohan a massive puncture, which brought out the virtual safety car immediately. So Doohan was out first lap. Lawson ended up retiring around lap 20 or something like that because he had floor damage the whole way through. And then Behrmann and Bortoleto both had power unit failures. We haven't seen that in ages. So it was interesting that there were two in one race.
And both of them are running Ferrari engines. But Gabriel Bortoleto, my cousin with one T, not two, qualified in his best ever position. He qualified in 13th for the race. So I just wanted to give him a shout out for, yay, climbing up.
And yay to Tsunoda as well. It's not an easy car to drive. Even Max was struggling. And do you know what? There were only six positions between them. You know, Max finishing in fourth, Tsunoda finishing in 10th. So I think that he is really, really doing a fantastic job at showing that he should have been the guy to get that seat over Lawson. So yay to Tsunoda. But I would also like to say Sainz and Albon in those Williams, we had so much racing the whole race. Sainz and Albon were overtaking each other back and forth numerous times. Albon overtook a Mercedes in a Williams.
I know that Williams is just like on steroids this year. It's great to see the ex-Ferrari driver overtaking his ex-teammate, right? I'm stoked for the Williams. Did you see the package in the lead up to the race of Alex Albon and James Vowles with the Blue Arrows? Is it the Blue Arrows? So they did this Air Force flight with the Blue Arrows in Miami. So they were each a passenger and there were five planes going up and, yeah, they pulled G-forces of around 7.5G and they went upside down. They were doing formation flying in these fighter jets. It was super specky to watch. James was pretty quiet during the flight, but he said it was phenomenal. He was pretty speechless. Those flights can make you feel really sick. As like I've done, not in a fighter jet, but I've done one in a Red Bull Air Race plane. Doing aerobatics, it's super fun. And when I did it, I think we pulled about 5G, maybe a bit under. And like you just feel your stomach being pushed back. And it was so fun. The adrenaline is just sky high. Literally.
How did the boys do in the plane?
They loved it. They loved it.
They're such a wholesome team, right? They're just such a wholesome team right now.
Running through the points in the driver standings, we've got Oscar Piastri leading the charge again, second race in a row on 131 points after the sprint race weekend and points for winning. Lando Norris, his teammate, is 115 points. So there's 16 points between them. Max Verstappen is on 99. George Russell in fourth, very respectable fourth, on 93.
Ooh.
Charles Leclerc with 53 points in fifth. Kimi Antonelli in sixth on 48 points.
Yeah.
Lewis Hamilton on 41 points in seventh.
Alex Albon!
30 points in eighth position. Esteban Ocon
with
14 points in ninth position. And Lance Stroll.
Oh.
What?
Oh.
Lance Stroll is 14 points.
There you go.
So that's the top 10 in the driver standings. Obviously, McLaren's leading the constructors with 246 points by a mile. Mercedes are second, 105 points behind on 141. Then Red Bull, then Ferrari, then Williams, then Haas, then Aston Martin, Racing Bulls, Alpine, and then Kit Sauber, 10th with 6 points.
Can we just for a moment acknowledge that in the top 10 driver standings, we currently have two what would have been considered backmarker teams last year, the year before. There are two drivers from two backmarker teams, and they've completely, well, not completely turned around their story for Haas and Williams. We haven't completely turned their story around yet because they're not, you know, the front runners, but they are top of the midfield. Pretty damn good.
It is very, very good. And a massive shout out to McLaren. So first McLaren driver to win three consecutive races in Oscar Piastri for 28 years. And the last time that happened was Mika Häkkinen, who was driving when I was working in F1 150 million years ago. No, it wasn't. It was 28 years ago in the 1997, 1998. As I said, last year, 1 year ago at the Miami Grand Prix was Lando Norris's maiden, his very first Grand Prix win.
And how many wins has Oscar Piastri had so far?
Yeah, well, he's got 6 wins under his belt now, and Lando's got 5.
Yes, it's one more than Norris. If he doesn't get the number one driver position after this race, then I don't know when they're going to give it to Piastri, because he needs that number one driver position right now. Sorry.
Yeah, he is working for it, and he's got his eye on the prize, and I feel like nothing is going to stop Oscar from getting it. He's just got that mental fortitude that Lando, he's a talented driver, no doubt about it. But Oscar's a talented driver with the mental fortitude, with that the cool, calm, collected, winning mentality. Oh, and he's smart, like we've said. There's still so much we haven't talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Max Verstappen is a dad. Congratulations.
I almost cried. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, Max and Kelly had a baby daughter called Lily. Yeah. And obviously, Lily's grandfather, Jos Verstappen, is a Formula One winner. Her grandfather on the other side, Nelson Piquet, is a 3-time Formula One world champion. And her father, Max Verstappen, is currently a 4-time Formula One world champion. So, Fernando Alonso, did you see?
No.
He came out and said, congratulations, Max and Kelly, on the birth of Lily. I look forward to racing her in Formula One soon.
That's taking the Mickey out of himself and out of, you know, the baby. That's clever. When is he going to retire?
Oh, never. Let's hope never.
Exactly. That's the happiest and the smiliest that I have ever seen Max. When he was doing a media interview, I can't remember who was interviewing him, and it was all about him being a dad now, and he had the biggest smile on his face, and it just goes to show, like, he does have a heart. He is a nice guy. It's just when it comes to racing, he's got his racing hat on, and he becomes a little bit more Jos in that situation. Congratulations to them. It's just so sweet to see how happy he is.
Fun fact on Kimi Antonelli. When Kimi got pole position, I'm not sure if you heard Toto Wolff come on the team radio and say, you're not an Andrea today.
Yes, I did hear that. And I don't know what that's about. I know his name's Andrea Kimi Antonelli.
Yes. So I messaged Simone, who has invented the F1 Live Pulse app that we spoke about a couple of episodes ago, because he's Italian. And I said, what was that comment? Is that a joke or what? And he said, well, Kimi was named after his uncle, who is a huge Kimi Raikkonen fan. His uncle's name is Andrea. So when Kimi was born, he was named Andrea Kimi Antonelli, named after his uncle. So he was more Kimi Raikkonen today than his uncle.
Okay.
Fun fact.
There you go.
Thank you, Simone, from Formula Live Pulse for that. Great app, by the way, if you like following telemetry during the race. Now, I've not listened to the soundtrack, but the F1 movie soundtrack has been released. Have you had a chance to listen to the soundtrack?
No, but to be honest with you, I do not give a rat's tail about the Formula One movie.
Really?
Yeah, I was really disappointed by the trailer. It just feels so ridiculously overproduced Hollywood. And I'm not into that. I hate the way that Hollywood now thinks that every movie needs a 10-minute action scene. And they need to use as many computers as possible to create it. And that's what the trailer felt like to me. And the storyline, I wasn't buying it as a, you know, as a byproduct of my feelings towards that. I have zero feelings towards the Formula One soundtrack.
So, get it out there, Mod. Put your feelings on the table. It's good to know. So,
am I Italian? Do I wear my heart on my sleeve? No.
Not much. No. We love it. The other thing we haven't yet talked about at all, and I can't talk about it, but you might be able to, is the F1 Academy.
Oh, yeah. I didn't get to watch it this week. Damn it.
But we don't get to see it in Australia, so.
Yeah. Do you know what? I might sit down and watch it today because I need to do that. But I do know that their race got washed out. I do know that they also have a Netflix series coming out as well.
Yes. 28th of May.
Yeah.
It's called F1 The Academy, which, yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to that.
Me too. Netflix is just absolutely hounding Formula One at the moment, and they're overdoing it, in my opinion. Like, they've got Drive to Survive. Great. Fabulous. They've got this Formula, the Academy now. Great. Fabulous. They deserve it. Formula 2 and Formula 3, they also deserve their own series, but they're only on F1 TV. Great. Fabulous. What I don't think needs to be happening on Netflix is all these random little series and documentaries that, and like, that there's just like so many. What?
Why are you so grumpy about it? I can't wait to watch The Seat with Kimi Antonelli. Somebody who I follow on social media said they were there in Miami and went to the preview or watched the first episode rather and said they cried. So
okay.
It's going to be emotional.
But like, do we really need that? He's only raced like six races. So why have we already got a documentary about him? Like, I just feel like they could have waited. They could have waited and...
I don't think it's a doco on Kimi per se. I think it's a doco on filling the Mercedes seat. So after Lewis announced he was leaving Mercedes, like the sort of the search, if you like, of who's going to come into that seat.
Didn't we get 3 episodes of that in Drive to Survive anyway? Each to their own. We have differing opinions on that. So maybe I'll have my opinions changed. I don't know. You know, do you know what? I probably will sit down to watch it.
My view is that give me as much F1 and F1 related docos, movies, fictional, everything. I want it all. The good, the bad, the ugly, I'll watch it. Whereas you're a bit more discerning, perhaps.
I am a bit more discerning, but it's also because stop making it so Hollywood. Make it more real. What I'm getting angry at.
And the last thing on my list is the Lego race. Did you see the, full props to Lego? What an epic sponsor activation, building 10 almost life-size replica Formula One cars, one for each team. They were two-seater F1 cars. And actually—
They drove.
They drove, yeah, 20 kilometres an hour. And the drivers raced them and crashed into each other. And I read somewhere that there was like 400,000, nearly 500,000 bricks used to build one car.
One car.
22,000 hours.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Right?
Wow. Because I did see Lando and Piastri in their car and someone was interviewing them and they were like, you're a bit of a fan of Lego, aren't you, Lando? And he was like, yeah, you know, built this fun last week or something. Like, it was quite cute to see him, but he was like rubbing the side of the car while he was talking about it. And as they were being interviewed, someone came and put something behind Norris, so he sat forward a little bit, and Piastri in the background was like, modifications already.
Booster seat.
It was just cute. Like, they were having fun.
So this week we're in Miami. Mon, have you been to Miami?
I have not been to Miami.
I have been to Miami. I didn't leave the airport. I was stuck in the airport in transit on my way to the FIFA World Cup in Brazil. We were there stuck because an airline who shall not be mentioned overbooked flights, and we had to reroute from Panama to Miami instead of flying from Panama to Brazil to try and get to Brazil in time for the Italy-England game, which, oh God, it was awful. That aside, in Miami airport for 7 hours, and I've got to say the percentage of people who spoke Spanish compared to the percentage of people who spoke English was probably 8-2.
I've kind of always been intrigued by Florida because of the climate, the Everglades, you know, the manatees, and it just seems like this larger than life place that I kind of wanted to see, because I just feel like it would be a very eye-opening experience. Let's say the Cuban culture is very, very strong, and that has me excited, and I'm like, okay, all right, I'd be really interested to go and see this. It's kind of a bit like Southern California in that respect. Florida, California, and New Orleans, the kind of, I guess, intoxicating culture, the food, the people, the color, the vibrancy, that would make me want to go to Florida.
When I think of Miami, the images that come up in my head, fake nails, fake lashes, fake boobs, fake tans, Trump, Greg Norman, and over the top, everything. That's,
you forgot Hawaiian shirt.
Well, I said over the top everything, which includes clones.
Yeah,
I haven't stepped outside of the airport, so I don't know. I'm just saying what my perceptions of the place would be.
And I think I would pretty much have the same perceptions, having not been there. But one of the first things I'd do if I went would be to go to the Everglades, which is the swampy, marshy, kind of crocodile-infested part of it. And that just sounds so interesting. And I just love the fact that there's so much water around. I just want to go and see all the marinas and the keys and, you know, see that lifestyle. I think that'd be cool.
Mon, did you get a chance to cook? I know you've just come back from travels.
I did cook, but do you know what? Literally, it wasn't super Floridian. And that really annoys me because both Espen and I have such different tastes in food. And I cannot stand the burgers, the barbecue, the mac and cheese. Like, it's just too heavy for me. I'm more like fresh Asian flavors or, you know, spices. Give that to me. Whereas Espen's like, yes, it's American week. Let's have burgers. And I'm like, ugh. So we're very different on that sense. And Floridian cuisine is very seafood based. He hates seafood. So couldn't do seafood.
Oh, a Norwegian that hates seafood.
I know. So couldn't do seafood. I can't get my hands on any alligator. Otherwise, I would have made something with alligator. Some alligator bites.
They eat alligator in Miami?
Google told me that.
Google told you that. Must be true. We eat crocodile in Australia, so it's not, you know, unheard of.
Exactly. So no seafood, no alligator. I was going to make a Cubano, which Cubans brought it to Florida, and it's a sandwich with ham and some pork and mustard and pickles and Swiss cheese, but Espen hates pickles and you can't have a Cubano without pickles. So I didn't get to make that. Couldn't make a key lime pie because we don't have key limes. We only have limes, and you can't make a key lime pie with normal limes. So, long story short, I went slightly American, quite American, and for the first time in my life, I made a rack of spare ribs from scratch in barbecue sauce that we made from scratch. So, sticky barbecue sauce pork ribs with a fresh coleslaw and some smashed potatoes is what I made.
Nice.
Yeah, it was good. It was very, very good.
Lovely.
And I tell you what, it's not that hard if anyone's interested in trying it. We have a break, don't we?
We do. Next week is a non-race week, so we'll be back with another episode. Tune in next week. Come join us. But for this week, that's it. Thanks, Mon.
Fabulous. If you guys liked what you heard and love listening to us, please leave a rating and or a review on your favorite podcast listening app. We're across them all. You can also get in touch with us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, TikTok, and YouTube. You can find some little clips there. You can hit the like button. You can hit the follow button, all of the fun things. Or you can email us at andawaywego f1podcast@gmail.com.
please leave us a rating or a review. It really does help our quite new podcast reach more people. Thank you, Mon, and thank you for having us in your ears. Until next week and until lights out.
It's lights out and away we go.
And Away We Go podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto and Monique Ciccato. Let's do it.